Radio Molossia.
News break. This month's news in the Republic of Molossia.
Molossian Broomball, 17 March 2024. It's time again for Molossian Broomball, the famous game with no rules. Though honestly, we Molossians aren't a real athletic bunch. When the mood strikes us, we take up the brooms and head out to play Broomball. Molossian Broomball isn't like that played up in the frozen north. None of that sissy messing about on ice stuff for us Molossians. Here we have brooms, we have a ball, and we have a rock-strewn dirt patch called the Alphonse Sims Memorial Cosmodrome and Broomball Field. On this dusty sward, we valiantly whack that ball or balls back and forth and spend large amounts of time retrieving them from the surrounding sagebrush. Eventually, we tire of this and call it a game. Rules? None, actually. If you want to have two teams, three teams, no teams, switch teams, if there are any, mid-game, have goals, have no goals, have sword fights with the brooms, anything goes. But above all, the main goal is to have fun. In other news, General Lissimo Francisco Franco is still dead. Molossian wedding and new citizen. 25 March 2024. Our nation's population has grown again. On 24 March 2024, Molossian citizen and first son Bryce Cardoza wed his true love, Jasmine Bailey. In a beautiful ceremony held in St. Petersburg, Florida, surrounded by family and friends, the couple professed their love for each other and were joined together in matrimony by none other than the president himself. As a result of the nuptials, Jasmine is automatically conferred Molossian citizenship. This brings our nation population to a record 40 citizens. Our nation continues to grow. Granted, most of the citizens live as expatriates in the U.S., but they are still part of our Molossian family, a family now larger by one more. Welcome to Molossia.
You've got the brain of a four-year-old boy, and I bet he was glad to get rid of it.
Thank you.
I've got a good mind to join a club and beat you over the head with it.
Strange adventure.
When Pardue awoke, the equatorial sun was barely over the horizon, but already the jungle was steaming. The 500 natives working on the Trans-Congo Highway were already swinging their axes and picks as diligently as natives ever worked, because they knew Pardue would soon be watching them. Pardue sat on the bunk in his tent. He was sweating. Not the healthy, dripping perspiration of a white man in equatorial Africa, but the clinging sweat that drew the marrow from his bones. He tried to stand, but his legs wilted. Jungle fever had struck. Swaying on the edge of his bunk, he forced four quinine capsules down his throat. He had to get out to the savages. No little thing like an invisible bug dared keep him away. Nothing before in his long jungle life had ever stopped him. Not even that time in the old days when an arrow pierced his eye. He had carried on then, wearing an eye patch till a glass eye arrived from France. If the jungle laborers suspected that he was unable to oversee them, all work would stop. Then the drums would start, and the natives would scatter to their villages. Time was ebbing fast. Already the rumor had spread that he was down. A few scattered beats of the jungle telegraph could be heard. Soon the drums would be thundering the news. Fewer axes and picks were being swung in the right of way, and they were being swung slower, the blows lighter. Pardue forced himself to his feet and staggered drunkenly to the door of his tent. He motioned to four natives who were standing nearby.
Yeah. Come. Pick me up. Carry me to the work.
At the roadside, the few remaining laborers stopped work, staring at him defiantly. The jungle drums increased their tempo, and from the undergrowth came the start of a chant. A chant that hadn't been heard since the days when the natives started their own wars. Pardue had the men prop him against a tree. He ran his hand over his forehead to brush away the sweat from his good eye. Suddenly, he laughed. His weakened body trembled with ironical mirth.
Pardue called to Mousa, his head boss man.
Mousa, call all the men.
The natives approached Pardue stolidly. They were surly, insolent.
You men, you think I'm sick, do you? You think I'm going to my tent and sleep? Well, I am until the fever leaves me. But I'll still be watching you.
He paused till he was sure every savage was staring at him. Then he removed his glass eye and placed it in the fork of the tree. Without a grunt, the natives grabbed their tools. Shortly, the blows of axes and picks again echoed throughout the jungle. Pardue smiled in satisfaction as he was carried back to his tent, for he knew the natives would keep on working as long as the watchful eye stared at them from the fork of the tree. This is Pat McGeehan in Hollywood, California, saying goodbye from my writer Charles Crowder and inviting you to listen to Mission of Madness, our next tale of
Strange Adventure.
Thank you.
You're listening to Radio Molossia.
Truth is stranger than fiction. This is the truth.
This is Ripley.
Believe it or not.
Thomas Jefferson Chambers of Anoak, Texas, was killed by an assassin. The bullet passed through the victim's chest and lodged in the identical spot in a portrait of Chambers hanging on the wall. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about a man who married his own wife and didn't know it.
Visit the Molossia Trading Company for shirts, sweatshirts, underwear, coffee mugs, and much more.
Talk about a man not knowing his wife. Henry Canaston, an English outlaw, divorced a noblewoman named Isabel of Ashton after 10 years of marriage. Then, 15 years later, he was married again to a woman named Marion of Oswestry. It was not until he was on his deathbed 13 years later that he learned both Isabel, his first wife, and Marion, the woman to whom he was married, was the same woman. Believe it or not.
I'd horsewhip you if I had a horse.
Thank you.
Radio Molossia.